Blog Talk Radio.
I ain't got nothing but three things to say about that.
Loving the Skin You're In Radio. I'm your host, Andrea Amador, best known as the Juicy Woman. I'm coming to you live from New York. Today is May 29th, 2013. As a certified empowerment coach and body image self-esteem expert and curvy and confident woman, I'm here to share my expertise with you and teach you how to bust out of body shame so that you can love the skin you're in. Before we talk about tonight's topic and I introduce you to my fabulous guest, Health at Every Size best-selling author and scientist, Dr. Linda Bacon, I want to let you know that you can get more information about how to end emotional eating and feel good about yourself at any stage of the game. That's right. You don't have to hang your hopes on losing weight in order to get confidence. I've got more than enough to share with you. Just visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/thejuicywoman and click on like to join the group. You can also get tips and more by following me on Twitter, as well at The Juicy Woman. You can catch all the archived episodes for the show at blogtalkradio.com/the-juicy-woman. Tonight, we'll be talking about how to beat the waiting game. Oh my gosh, how insane is it? Are you struggling? Have you been struggling for millions of years dealing with your weight, hating your body, feeling that, like you'll never be enough the size that you are? Let me tell you about the expert who can teach you how to make your body exactly as it is work for you. My guest this evening is Linda Bacon, PhD. She's an author, professor, researcher, consultant, and scientist, and world-renowned speaker on the subject of her book, Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight. The New York Times hails her book, saying, in the long run, the health at every size approach works better than dieting. Dr. Bacon combines her academic expertise and clinical experience to help make connections between scientific research and practical application. Dr. Bacon shifts the focus from weight to health, giving doctors, dietitians, therapists, and people of all shapes the tools for achieving better fitness, health, and even happiness, everything without dieting. Tonight, she'll be discussing why fat isn't the problem and how and why more self-love and better care is the solution. I want to welcome my guest, Linda. Dr. Linda Bacon, I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Oh, it's a very sweet introduction. I tell you, my mom would be proud.
Oh, well, she has a lot to be proud of. I'm blown away by everything you have done for so many people struggling with weight.
I'm so looking forward to talking with you again, Andrea. I know you've just been doing such wonderful work on the same topic, and hats off to you for all that you do, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I know everybody wants to get a sense of how this all started for you.
Okay. Boy, you're going to bring me back to some painful times then, because
I'm really
miserable around my body and weight and eating. And I think that's really what started my whole journey, was to save myself. And I guess the only way I knew how to do it back then was to turn to academics. And so after having been on that diet roller coaster where I would lose weight and regain the weight and lose it again and regain it again, I decided to turn to science to learn a little bit more about why that was happening and how I could get out of that cycle. And it's amazing to me that after 3 graduate degrees, I finally figured out that the messages we usually hear in our culture about why we weigh, what we're supposed to do to get in healthier bodies, just aren't grounded in science, and they often backfire. And that it was only when I stopped listening to all of the recommendations to diet and to get to the gym on a regular basis and instead left behind what all the experts were saying that I could actually listen to my body and find that my body could tell me exactly what it needed, when it needed, and I could trust it. And I could relax around food. Instead of fighting my desires, I could just honor them. And amazing things happened in the process. Suddenly food became easier, more comfortable, fun. I actually learned to appreciate chocolate instead of feeling guilty about it. And the oddest thing that happened throughout all of this was that my weight didn't balloon up like I was expecting it would. No, it actually stabilized at a place that was pretty comfortable. And, you know, it was ironic that when I gave up the fight, that suddenly I recognized that the fight was what was getting me in trouble, that my body could do just fine on its own, and it could direct the show.
How did you get to the point where you could feel comfortable and safe around chocolate or cookies or whatever your crave or urge was and not feel like you would mow down your grandmother to eat it?
Well, I'd say that there were two things that had to happen for me to get to that place. One had to do with my relationship with food, and the other had to do with my relationship with my body. So let me tackle food first. Probably the most important thing was to give up on all those dietary rules. You know, when I had that sense that chocolate was bad and that it had too many calories and it was going to make me fat, then I couldn't ever hear the message of chocolate. You know, when I would eat it, I would just be consumed with guilt. And when I let go of all of those ideas about food, and instead I just paid attention to what the food could teach me, it was amazing to see that the food could actually talk. So, for example, when I ate chocolate, what I learned to do is to eat slowly and to really be mindful about it and to notice it in my mouth as it was dissolving and all the wonderful sensations and just how great it tasted. And when I started to do that, I realized that, wow, my body was giving me these sensations where it tasted amazing right away, but after a few bites, there was a little bit of a toning down, and the same chocolate didn't taste as fantastic anymore. And then when I studied the science, I actually learned that, well, this is just about physiology. Their taste buds naturally tone down after they get an initial taste blast, so that basically when calorie needs are being met, your body's saying, I don't need as much anymore, so you can slow down. So anyway, as I started to notice all of that, I realized that, hey, all I had to do was commit to loving food, to eating it when it was at its most delicious time. And then when it stopped being as good, well, I could just stop then and go back later when it would taste really good again, but that I didn't have to eat a whole lot at once. And that was really revolutionary for me, because what it meant was that I could give myself permission to just enjoy food. And so when I let up with all the rules, and I knew that I could have whatever I wanted whenever I wanted, it really freed me up to be able to stop and not be out of control around food. And I learned a lot about this physiologically. Excuse me?
Oh, no, please, go ahead. I'll hold my question.
Well, I learned a lot about this as I studied physiology. That's what my PhD is in. And one of the things that I learned, too, was that if you eat smaller amounts, it supports much healthier blood sugar regulation as well. That, for example, let's say you were to binge on chocolate. What would happen then was your body would have to release a lot of insulin to help all of the sugar get into cells. And when you bombard your body with lots of insulin, it can cause some damage. But on the other hand, if you ate just a few bites of something, then you just release a smaller amount of insulin, and insulin can help the sugar get into cells and help to nourish you in a really healthy, positive way. And then if you go back to eating the sugar maybe a half hour later, again, you'll just trigger a small insulin response. So what this means is that you can eat the same amount of chocolate, but if you're just paying attention to your body's needs and you eat it more slowly, your body supports you in healthy blood sugar regulation, and that same amount of sugar is not going to be damaging to you. But on the other hand, if you eat all of that sugar at once, then it might trigger a large insulin response. And if you do this to your body repeatedly over time, well, that's one of the things that we know contributes to people getting type 2 diabetes, along with genetics, of course. So anyway, really, the bottom line message I have to all of these little stories is just trust your body and just enjoy your food. And your body can help you, and it can find ways to eat chocolate in a way that just supports good nourishment. Now, of course, you're going to want to put a little bit more than chocolate into your body to get all the other nutrients you need. But you'll also find, too, that if all you're eating is chocolate, you'll get pretty bored with it.
But, Linda, my question is more around the initial feelings of compulsion, because I would understand that my particular experience was for a long time I could not get enough of the bad foods, all the foods that I always, you know, would not eat during a diet phase. So I ate to the point of just gaining obsessive, you know, tremendous amounts of weight. And I didn't have that satiety switch in me. It was something that had to be activated by using the stress relief techniques that I teach, the emotional freedom technique. But where is compulsion in this? What have you seen in terms of people?
Well, a big part of the compulsion is about that you don't give yourself permission ordinarily to eat it. So if you're eating it, then you feel like, well, I'm never going to be able to do this again. And so you feel very out of control with it. So my recommendation for people, and I know that this is going to be a really scary thing to do, is that in the beginning, you might just be a little bit out of control. That the first time you give yourself permission for a food that you've denied yourself, or, you know, that feels like it's a treat, it may be hard to be comfortable around it. But all I'm going to suggest is that in the beginning, you only commit to being mindful, to watching how you feel. And what you're going to notice is you probably don't feel so good. And the more you have that experience, the more you just key in and watch it, then it builds, and after a while you realize, oh, you know, it didn't work for me last time. So what people find is that helps the compulsion to leave, is kind of giving into it at first, but just being mindful and recognizing that it doesn't give you what you want. It doesn't really make you happy. So the first
you
step
mentioned
is
that.
Be a non-judgmental fact finder. Just watch what happens.
Okay.
And I also just want to say that I've put the focus so far just on eating, but as I mentioned earlier, I think there's another part to the process that's really quite helpful, and that's also about learning appreciation for your body. That many times the reason people are dieting, of course, is because they think that they're too fat and there's something wrong with it and that they need to lose weight. And so that makes it very difficult to ever be comfortable eating if you always see eating as something that's contributing to this bad body that you've got. So another component to the picture is learning how to look more kindly at your body, which is another topic that we could spend quite a bit of time on, but I'll let you direct the energy here of where you want to head in this conversation.
Well, yes, I'd like to move along the same trajectory because you mentioned that we're emotionally starved. Can you go into a little bit more detail around that, specific to the feelings that we have towards our bodies?
Okay. Well, okay. Well, first, I think that when people are dissatisfied, that a lot of us don't really have the skills to know how to take care of ourselves. You know, when we get depressed, for example, we don't know how to sit with the sadness that we might have. And, you know, one of the challenges of being human is that we're going to meet up with hard times. You know, people are going to die on us. Relationships are going to end. And we need the skills to be able to manage those challenging emotions when they come up. And if you don't have the skills to do that, then food can actually be a really remarkable and wonderful way of helping to give you a temporary feel-good fix, or maybe numbing you out a little bit so you don't have to think about whatever's going on in your life. Instead, you can focus in on feeling bad about having just binged. So food can serve the purpose of taking us away from the challenging emotions that might come up for us. So one thing that's really helpful is learning better skills to be able to tolerate all of the emotions that come up. Now, some of those skills could be things like learning to just share with friends so that when you're going through a hard time, you can go get a hug and just get some understanding from someone else. And, mm-hmm. you know, that might be enough to help you to tolerate the bad thing if you're in the company of someone who really loves and cares for you. So that's an example of just developing some skills and some ways to be able to get you through those hard times. But your question was more specifically about your body. And I think that that's also another big trigger, is if you feel bad about your body, it's going to be hard to want to take good care of it and to nourish it well if you see it as the enemy and something that's betrayed you. So I think it's also really, really valuable if you spend some time getting to know your body and making friends with it. Now, I know that I don't expect people to just be able to look in a mirror and say, I love what I see. You know, that's a pretty hard step, and there's lots of things you can do to get further along in that journey. But one thing that I think that we can all do that's pretty basic is all of us can just marvel at just how amazing our body is in terms of just allowing us to physically be in the world. You know, like you can look down at your legs and you can think how amazing it is that I was able to walk from my house to the movie theater. And so now I can appreciate going to the movie. Our bodies are just amazing in terms of just what they allow us to do. The fact that we just have a mouth that allows us to converse with other people. And so it shouldn't be too hard for us to key in to just how amazing our bodies are if we start to look at them just from the perspective of functionality and just allowing us to be in the world. So I think that starting on that first step can be really, really helpful. It's just thinking about how amazing your body is, and that can get you on the trajectory then of being able to also appreciate what it looks like physically.
I'm in complete agreement with you, but I'm going to play devil's advocate for just a little bit. What happens when we have a doctor who says, oh, these numbers are too high, you've got to lose weight? What happens then? How do you deal with that? What's your recommendation?
Right. See, that's the challenge. Doctors are growing up in the same culture we are, where they're getting the same damaging and unscientific messages about weight that everybody else is. So you can't, unfortunately, you can't expect your doctor to know much more about how to be at a healthy weight than anybody else. You know, they're trained in that same old paradigm that everybody else is, that you have to be in a thinner body in order to be healthy, and that you have to diet in order to get that thinner body. So the first thing that we need to do is recognize that we can't give up our power to our doctors, that our doctors are intended to be our advisors, and we need to be critical consumers of the information that they're giving us and decide whether or not we think it's valuable. And unfortunately, again, when it comes to weight, you'll find that doctors tend to be more prejudiced than most people in our society. There's more and more research that's coming out these days that shows that doctors have very strong bias against heavier people. And so what this means is when you go to your doctor, you're going to need to have the resiliency to be able to make a decision about whether your doctor is giving you good advice or whether what they're saying is damaging. So you need to be armed with good information about advice, about your own health, and not rely solely on your doctor who may not have the best information available. And I think that that's a hard thing, that we go to our doctors expecting them to give us medical advice. That's their training. But unfortunately, the state of medical science today is that doctors are not well educated in weight, and many of them are giving out a lot of misinformation. So I don't think that this is a field that we can be as trusting in as we can with other aspects of our health. So I would really encourage people first to make sure that they have a size-friendly doctor who is well-educated on these issues. And one thing that you might want to do is you can consult the Health at Every Size Community Resources, which is a free website where you can search a database in your area and try to see if there's any weight-friendly, size-friendly doctors that might already have thought about these issues and be prepared to give you good advice. So,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
You had in the book Health at Every Size, you had revealed some astonishing information about the weight set point and why it's so hard to lose weight. So, I'd like to get an idea what kind of an expectation what is the new mindset that you're encouraging people to adopt?
The new mindset is that the scale is not going to give you accurate information about your health or how you look. And what I'm going to encourage people to do is instead to focus more on how their body feels and doing things like eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, and to use those as moderators that are going to tell you how much to eat. And the more you get in touch with your body's rhythms and messages, then your body's going to just help you to get to a weight that's healthiest and best for you. So it's best to throw out all those ideas of numbers and what you're supposed to do and just give in to trust. And you use the word set point, and that's an important word in science. What it refers to is the fact that your body really cares what you weigh, that it's got an ideal sense of a range of what would be healthiest and best for you. And your body is going to work pretty hard to try to keep you in that healthy range. It's very similar to things like body temperature or blood sugar, where your body's got a healthy range that it wants to keep you in. Now, on a hot day, you're going to go outside, and your body's temperature is going to go pretty high, and it might get out of a comfortable range. And that's why your body then has mechanisms like sweating to try to get you to lose heat from your body so that you come back into homeostasis or a comfortable range. You get back to your set point temperature. Well, just like that, you have parallel systems around weight, where when your weight gets too high or too low, your body's got all kinds of systems to try to get you back into a healthy range. But one of the things that we find with weight set point that makes it a little bit different than things like temperature is, number one, it's more of a long-term system, not short-term. So what that means is, like, for example, you could diet and lose a lot of weight and be below your healthy weight set point. But you could get there. And that, but once you're there for a little while, that's when it's going to trigger responses by your body where your body's going to try to goad you to do things so you can regain the weight and get back into your set point. So that's one of the reasons why people who have been dieting for a while might feel relentlessly hungry. It's their body just turning on their appetite response to get them back to where they should be. But here's one of the things that's very frustrating for a lot of people, and that's that you also have mechanisms that try to get you to lose weight. What we find is that for many people, you can actually override these signals and get to a weight that's unhealthy for you. Now, your body will give you all kinds of signals to try to get you to lose weight. Like, for example, it'll tell you you're not hungry. But we know that there's a lot of people that can say, well, you know, but the food tastes so good that even though I know that I feel full in my stomach and that I don't need any more calories, I get such a reward from eating, you know, it tastes so good, that I'm going to override those other signals that I'm getting and I'm going to keep eating. And so what we know is that it's possible to be above the healthy set point weight for you. So the big message here is that your body would prefer you be in your set point range. So the key is going to be you just have to give in to trusting your body and not trying to control and override it. And and your body will guide you then to getting to a healthy weight. So for some people, if you've been consistently overeating, it may be that their body thinks that they should be lighter. And so doing something like this might result in weight loss for them. But it may also be that your body is just the right set point for you is a weight that's heavier than what many people are reaching for culturally. And so even you may find that even if you do everything right and pay attention to your body, it might not necessarily result in weight loss, that there's a range of diversity in size, in weight, just like there is in height. And some people are just meant to be heavier. And so there's going to have to be a little bit of trust and acceptance in whatever nature gives you.
How do our emotions and the beliefs that we have about ourselves and weight and food, how does that affect the set point?
As far as I know, your emotions shouldn't affect your set point. Like you might temporarily be, like maybe you feel emotionally bad and so you're going to, and for you, one of the responses to that is you just want to eat because you get a feel-good blast and it's distracting and that's how you take care of yourself. But that's not going to affect your set point. What that means is that maybe temporarily you'll eat more than you need. But if you're still paying attention to what's going on in your body, you're going to find that your body's going to compensate for it, that later on it's probably going to tell you to eat a few less calories to make up for it. So going through difficult times emotionally, if you're paying attention to your body, should be fine in terms of maintaining a healthy set point. But notice that I said if you're maintaining your body. So let me try to go into this in more depth. Scientists have actually studied this a lot. And in fact, I could tell you about probably over 100 research studies that I've read that have looked at this topic I'm going to talk about now. And the topic is around emotional eating. And here's what they find. They find that you can divide people into two different categories. That one is the people that are what we call intuitive eaters. They're the people that just eat, pay attention to their body. They eat when they're hungry, they stop when they're full. But the other class of people is what we call people that have that dieting mentality, or in the scientific lingo, we call them restrained eaters. And they're the people that eat because they have ideas about food or amounts, and they're trying to control their eating, and they're not as tuned in to their body. And here's what we find, is that when people are emotional eaters, when people have more of that dieting mentality and emotions come up for them, because they're not used to paying attention to things like fullness, they don't have natural breaks in place that help them to stop eating. That's the time that they reach for food, and it can be really easy to overeat. Where, on the other hand, people who are intuitive eaters, when they're going through an emotionally hard time, what we find is there's a natural response where their body just kind of shuts down a little bit. I guess it diverts energy to their brain and to taking care of themselves in other ways. And there's less of an interest in food. So what we find is that if you're an emotional eater, if you're a dieter or a restrained eater, you're going to be much more vulnerable to emotions, meaning that you overeat. Whereas if you're more of an intuitive eater, you've got all these natural breaks in place, and when things get hard, your body just kind of tones down and loses appetite rather than goading you to eat more. So the key, if you want to figure out how to ride out your emotions best, is to learn how to become more of an intuitive eater, and then you're not going to find yourself overeating so much.
The piece I'd like to talk about here next is what you had mentioned about how our foods, the foods that many of us crave, the chips and the pasta and all of these products, that they're actually engineered in a way that it's keeping people overweight. I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, first off, I got to say that I'm not so comfortable using the word overweight. Because I don't know that there's a weight over which someone is necessarily unhealthy. That there are there are a lot of people that fit into that BMI category that scientists call overweight that might just be at the perfect weight for them. So I think that there's something really wrong in the terminology that we use. Okay, but anyway, I don't know that the science is so clear that that foods are engineered to keep people at heavier weights right now. I think that there's a lot of really confusing stuff that goes into this. But let me just give you an example of one of the ways in which food has changed so that our bodies are less able to get messages that it needs from the food. So let's think about something like high fructose corn syrup, right? I think is quite symbolic of our processed food times today, right? Everything contains a lot of high fructose corn syrup. So high fructose corn syrup is a type of sugar that came initially from corn. So let's go back to corn, the food that it originally came from. It's the sugar, it's the sweetness that's in corn. And the corn, in addition to having sugar, also has a lot of other great stuff in it, like it's got fiber, and it's got a lot of vitamins and minerals in it, and it also has some water in it. So when you eat the corn, you're getting messages from a lot of different nutrients that are in that food. And I'll give you an example of one of the messages you're getting from all of the fiber that you're eating. Fiber contributes to a feeling of fullness. So after a while, you're not going to want to eat, a lot of corn. So if you're eating it off of the cob, you know, maybe you eat one ear of corn or two ears. But after a while, you're probably going to lose interest. One, because you're going to get full. Two, because your body's got something we call sensory-specific satiety, where it wants variety, and it just loses interest when it's just getting all of the same kinds of messages. So people don't eat 10 ears of corn. It just doesn't seem to happen. And there's also a lot of chewing that would be involved.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, here's what can happen. When scientists go to laboratories and they split apart that corn and they separate out the sugar from everything else, then you only get one, or you don't get as many messages from the food that you're eating. Now, one of the messages that sugar gives us is pleasure. It's our reward for getting all of the other great nutrients that were in the corn. And that's an important thing, that we get pleasure out of eating, because, hey, if we didn't eat, we would die. So it makes sense that we're biologically set up to enjoy food, and sugar is one of the vehicles that gives us that pleasure response. So what modern food processing has done is they've taken the stuff that gives you pleasure away from all of the other stuff that give you messages that say, oh, I've had enough, stop eating. So that's one of the ways in which eating our processed food diet these days could get us into trouble, because we just get all of the foods that make us feel good, but we're not getting all of the other nutrients that we need to nourish our bodies well. So one of the suggestions that I have for people then is that if you really want to nourish your body well, it's going to mean that you're going to have to eat some real food that comes from nature, because that's where you're going to get all of the messages. If all you're eating is processed food, it's going to be a little harder for your body to get everything that it needs. The food processors don't care so much about your health and whether or not your body has all the information it needs for healthy weight regulation. They're just concerned that you keep buying it. And so the only thing that they're going to try to focus in on is giving you the pleasure response. But, of course, we know that we need a lot more from food than just pleasure. So I would encourage people to find food that gives you both pleasure and a lot of other nutrients that can be helpful to keep your body functioning well. So what this means is that if all you're eating in your diet is processed food, you might be getting yourself into trouble and not get everything that you need. But if you switch to getting more variety in your diet and some foods that come from nature and finding foods that you really enjoy, then you'll do a much better job of getting all the stuff that your body needs.
What would a typical day look like of someone who is following the health at every size approach to living?
Oh. Well, I would think that probably one of the biggest things there is that people get to reconnect with joy. Because health at every size is all about finding out what it is that makes you happy. So with food, it's about finding the foods that make you feel good. So to go back to that whole processed food kind of example, what you're probably going to find if you're eating nothing but sugar is that you're going to be constipated all the time, that you're not getting any fiber in your diet. So the health at every size approach is to look at, you know, am I comfortable in all kinds of ways? And certainly food choices can play a role in that, and so can your activity choices. I think the old model, we're taught that we're supposed to go to the gym and keep our heart rate up at a certain level and, you know, be on treadmills. But most people don't get reward from that. It's not fun for them. There are some for whom that might trigger an endorphin response and it's really fun. And if that's fun for you, then great, go for it. What we're going to find is that a lot of people don't get enjoyment from that kind of exercise. And so they need to find ways to connect with what is it that makes me feel pleasure in my body that I'm going to keep doing again and again. And so what that might mean for people is, well, maybe there's a big social aspect to being physical, that they get much more pleasure out of being in their body when they're going for a walk with friends, for example. So it's all about discovering what it is that makes us happy and gives us pleasure and making sure that we insert that into our lives.
What about, what would you tell the person who says, no, I don't eat vegetables, I won't eat vegetables or fresh fruit? What's your recommendation for them?
Well, you know, I would certainly understand if people don't like vegetables, given how vegetables have always been promoted in our culture and how they're grown and what they taste like when you get them from supermarkets. I think about something like a tomato, for example. If you get a tomato at a supermarket, it usually tastes pretty bland and hard. But on the other hand, if you get a tomato from the farmer's market, something that was that ripened on the vine and was grown for flavor rather than for longevity, that's like candy. It can just be so amazing to taste what that's like. So one of the things that I'd suggest is if you don't like vegetables, part of the reason might be where you're getting them, that you might want to look to getting fresher foods, going, you know, growing some yourself, going to farmers markets, and you'll see that food tastes so completely different and can taste, food really should taste amazing, and if it doesn't, something's wrong. So step one might be to think about where you shop. Another thing might be to think about how it is that you prepare things. If all you know about carrots is to boil them, and you might find that they're pretty boring. But there's so many ways to bring out the natural sweetness of carrots and make them fun. You know, my son, for example, loves when we roast carrots in maple syrup. And, you know, it brings out even more sweetness and tastes delicious. And so he looks forward to carrots this way because they've been prepared that way. He also loves them when we put it in a mustard vinaigrette. So there's, I think, another issue is that people have just never been taught to find exciting ways to eat their vegetables. And so that can be another way that you could do it, is to learn a little bit more about cooking. Or when you go out to restaurants, you can experiment a little bit more. So, for example, let's say you're so used to eating meat and you've got all these meat dishes you love, like you love teriyaki chicken, for example. Well, it may be that that teriyaki sauce can work really well on something like squash or carrots, too. And it can, or actually, my favorite is teriyaki sweet potatoes. So you can find the taste that you might like in the diet that you have now and just see if there's ways that you could bring those flavors into vegetables. And I think the more that people get creative with food, the more that they can find that food, that vegetables can be amazing if you just open your mind and get and experiment with it a little bit more. And another thing that I'd always like to suggest is to eat with friends, that food can always be a lot more fun when it's part of a celebration and part of community. And so that might be also another way to bring in some more appreciation. And it's totally fascinating when you study the science to know that when you enjoy your food, you actually can absorb more nutrients from that food. I was really surprised to see that research. There was some research that was done that just showed that when people are multitasking, like when they're watching a movie and they're eating, they're not going to absorb as many nutrients into their blood as they would when they eat the identical food, but they're focused on it and they're mindful of it and they're appreciating it. So and I think that the biggest thing is to put a priority on enjoying things. And if you don't like vegetables, then that can be your challenge, is to figure out how you can appreciate vegetables more.
How about the question of summertime is coming and, you know, there's such a temptation to lose those 10 or 20 pounds or whatever it is. What recommendation would you have for someone who feels that same old pressure again to change their body quickly?
Yeah, that is just so tough for people to deal with, because there's that whole idea in your mind that if only I was thin, I could be happy, or people would see me as more attractive. And my suggestion is going to be for people to think about, well, what is the big thing that you're looking for in weight loss? And identify that. So in that example that you gave me, I bet you the person is going to probably say, well, the reason I want to get thin is because I want to look more attractive to other people, right? So let's say that they decide that's what they want, right? Then I'm going to suggest that whatever your answer to that question is, in terms of what is it that you're looking for that you think weight loss can get you, that you ask, now that I know what I'm looking for, how can I get this directly? Because weight loss isn't going to be the only way that you can get that. There's lots of ways that you can look more attractive to other people rather than instead of the only way of being thinner. So you might look more attractive to people if you put more effort into decorating your body with clothes or tattoos or, you know, whatever it is that makes you feel unique and beautiful. So there's lots of ways to just celebrate your body that way, and other people will find you more attractive rather than feeling like weight is the only way to go about it. And the other thing I should add is to recognize, too, that lots of people find that, first off, when they might be able to successfully lose weight in the short run, but what we know from science is that for the vast majority of people, that's not a long-term solution, that most people tend to regain the weight over time and often more. And it's not because they failed, because they weren't good dieters or weren't good at controlling their intake. It's because physiologic mechanisms kicked in. They were below their set point, and their body tried to get them to conserve more energy and get fatter and, you know, regain the weight. So what we find is that even if you were to achieve what you wanted short term, it's just a setup for long term failure, and that oftentimes people end up actually heavier in the long run than before they even began the weight loss journey in the first place. There's probably been I've already counted 7 research studies that have looked at people over long term. And what they find is that the people that diet the most are the ones that are more likely to actually end up heavier later in life, whereas the people that don't diet are more likely to stay weight stable and thinner throughout life. So the moral of the story is to just live in the present body that you've got. Figure out how to make it more attractive and to feel more attractive in it. And let your weight just fall into place on its own. That might not be something that you're going to have a lot of control over the long run. But we certainly know that you can have a lot of impact on how other people view you just by feeling better about yourself. If you walk confident in the world, people see you as more attractive.
I would love to keep you here for another 10 minutes. If I could, I want to ask you another question about how people view you, because many times we give up our power and we ask people to watchdog us and tell us, you know, do you really need that, or you know, what's the matter with you? Are you really going to have that, or don't you have any self-respect? What recommendation do you have for people who are doing that to change?
Oh, yeah, you know, I teach nutrition to college students, and I tell you, everybody wants to know, what should I eat? Just tell me. Give me rules to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be really scary when they get the response from me that, sorry, you know your body better than I can. You're going to have to be the one that's going to figure out how best to nourish you. I don't know how many calories is going to be perfect for you right now because, hey, I don't know when you last ate, and I don't know how fast your metabolism is and whether your body used up all the energy from your last meal already. So I can't tell you the exact number of calories that's going to be right for you. But on the other hand, you can key into your body and get those messages that are going to be much more accurate and helpful in helping you to get to a healthy weight than anything I can tell you. So what I always want to tell people is, don't trust me as an authority. You know more than I do. I can help you to get more information about how to read your body, but I can't do that for you. So when I'm teaching people about nutrition, then I can teach them about all of the body cues, like, they can tell me things that they're feeling in their body. Like the number one thing people always complain about is constipation. It seems like that's a pretty common American thing. Only in the United States do people actually keep magazines in their bathroom. You know, there's such an assumption here that we're just going to be hanging out there for a while. And that's because mm-hmm. we just don't get much fiber in our diet. You go to almost every other country and people eat a lot more fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and they're getting a lot more fiber in their diet, and constipation's not a problem. But anyway, so once people can start to recognize the ways in which they're not feeling good in their body, then they can learn a little bit about nutrition and what kinds of foods they can choose that are going to help them to feel better. Then they can test it out and see if, in fact, that's true. And so when people start to do that and they recognize, wow, I do feel better when I eat more fiber, more foods with fiber, then they can start to shift their body in that direction. And then they can start to making sure that the foods that they can find enjoyable ways of getting more fiber in their diet. So, for example, they can realize that, well, carrots don't do it for me, but I love sweet potatoes, and so maybe if I roast that, it, you know, it's a natural way of getting the fiber that I need, helping me to feel good, and it tastes great also. So I'm going to keep telling people, don't look to me as the authority. Trust yourself and learn how to hear all of those signals in your body. But if you've been dieting all your life, you've probably shut down all of those signals. You know, when your body was hungry, you were probably saying, but I can't eat now because, you know, now that'll just put more calories in and I'm going to gain too much weight. So you learn to shut down hunger signals. So regaining the relationship with your body where you can trust, see those signals and learn to trust them is going to be an important key. So it comes back to what I was saying before, that if you could just be a non-judgmental fact finder, just watch what happens as you start to give yourself permission to eat food, and you'll learn what kinds of, you'll be able to read signals from your body. You'll be able to see how foods affect you, how exercise affects you, and it's going to help you to make better choices.
I'd love to ask you to share some of the very specifics from your chapter of respecting yourself, body and soul, because I think that's where the core starts, how we feel about our body, and food just is a consequence of that. So what would you recommend for someone who you know, just can't stand their body, and they feel that pressure to change and, you know, lose weight for a bathing suit or whatever it is. What's your recommendation for someone hurting?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that I'd want to say is to have some compassion for yourself. That it's particularly if your body is large, it's, you know, you've been getting messages all your life that there's something wrong with you. And it can be really painful and difficult to live in a culture where your body type isn't appreciated. And to just recognize that there's something really messed up with the culture. But that doesn't mean that you're wrong. It means that the culture's got to change. You know, just like someone who has dark skin is probably going to meet up with racism and discrimination, and they're going to have a harder life and less opportunity oftentimes in this culture. But the answer is not to go bleach their skin. The answer is to recognize that this is not a fair world that we live in, and that we've got to change the culture so that racism doesn't exist. And we have to find ways to be able to manage living in a body that's going to set us up for less opportunity. So what that might mean is that we need to develop better community so that, you know, we have safe places that we go to where we don't get the same kinds of judgments, where we see other people that are living in bodies like ours, and we can see how fantastic they are. And then that can help us to be able to apply the same stuff to us. So, again, it's about recognizing that this is not a fair, respectful world that we live in. And so we're going to have to be the ones to kind of give new messages about our bodies. So it might mean that, for example, if you believe that your body is ugly, what you might want to do is go out and find other people who have bodies that look a little like yours, but can be role models. So if you can find larger people that are, you know, enjoying their larger bodies and dressing well, you can go to museums and you can see, like, the Rubens has done some gorgeous paintings of larger women, really just accentuating how their curves are just gorgeous. So finding beauty and not just buying into those very narrow cultural definitions that don't include many people and don't respect the diversity of what a human body looks like.
Linda, I'm so grateful that you've shared. I'm so grateful that you've shared all of this wonderful information with our listeners. How can people find out more about Health at Every Size and all of the good work that you do?
Well, one place is you can go to my website, which is lindabacon.org, and you'll find plenty of information there. I also tried to summarize all of this in a book, which you've mentioned already, called Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight. And if you go to my website, you'll find a link to the book's website. And if anybody wants to check it out, I've got a lot of excerpts that you can freely download off of the website. And if you're looking for some basic messages of just how to appreciate your body, you might just want to start with the introduction, which is available for free on the website. I also want to let people know about the Health at Every Size Community Resources, which is a free website that helps people to just get connected with other people that are on Health at Every Size journeys. And you can learn about all of the great blogs that people have, and you can find dietitians and doctors and all kinds of people who can provide you with information or support on your Health at Every Size journey. And I also want
Dr.
to see
Linda
you
Bacon.
And
thank
are we
you
out of time?
So much. It breaks my heart to have to leave you, but I will definitely put up all your resources on my blog. Thank you.
Sounds great. And thanks for all the great stuff that you're doing, Andrea. It was a delight to talk to you.
Thank you. It was my delight.
All right. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Contact her and let her know. When we touch base tomorrow, discuss upcoming. Love to touch me tomorrow. You're upcoming. Yep. Please send me a fresh headshot. I'll contact her, let you know, let her know about your. I'd love to touch base tomorrow. That's your upcoming show. Can I give you a buzz around? One. The show. Get it featured. JPEG. I'd love to touch base tomorrow. That's your option. So, you down for your gift. For me, too. Hey, Catherine, I'm sure that Linda would be happy to share a copy. Awesome. Thank you so much. This was fabulous. What an amazing interview you shared. I'm so grateful. To share, to spread word of your work. I'd like to write blog post summarizing the key points of our interview. I'd like to write a blog post summarizing the key points of our interview. After it's written, I'll send you the link. So much. Thank you so much. This what an amazing interview you shared this. So grateful to have the opportunity to spread word of your work with to write a blog post summarizing the key points of our interview. After it's written, I'll send you the link for you to share. After it's written, this was my what do you have coming up next? That I can hear. You have like it. I've got a message from one of my colleagues. Catherine Schiller, former board model. Board model. Board model. Passionate side. got a message from one of my colleagues, Catherine Schulz. Former board model, passionate size advocate. Leave the bed. Following my broadcast, when I got a message from one of them, suffering is well known. Thank you. Catherine is a leader in the Plus Model community. Former board model. Passionate size advocate. And an activist for charity. Eva Bevan. Know if you would be willing to share a copy of your book. For the raffle, the girth. To read the Reader's Digest program. The Reader's Digest program. This was fabulous. What an amazing interview you shared this evening. So grateful to have had the opportunity. Spread word of your work with my audience. Following my broadcast, our show. Following my broadcast of the show after noon, or upcoming show. The upcoming show this afternoon, I got a message from one of my colleagues, Catherine Schuler. Catherine is a leader in the Plus Model community, former Ford model. Passionate size advocate and activist. For her many charities. Including Diabetics. He wanted to know if you would be willing to share a copy of your book with a raffle at Sugar Savvy Solutions. Said that she would love to promote you for the Reader's Digest program. She is a wonderful person who is incredibly giving and generous, always concerned about helping, always concerned about supporting. A wonderful person. She's a wonderful person. Filled with integrity. She's incredible. incredibly giving and generous, always concerned. I'd like to write a blog post. Linda. Thank you so much. This was fabulous. I'll send you the link as soon as the show is processed. What an amazing interview you shared. I'm so grateful. I want to know if you will be willing to share a copy of your book for the raffle at Sugar Savvy Solutions. I would like to promote you to the Reader's Digest program. Catherine is Can't recommend Catherine. I know Catherine to be a wonderful person, filled with integrity, who is incredibly giving and generous, deeply passionate about supporting others. Be happy to send an email introducing the two of you. Also, I'd like to write a blog.